Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. This morning comes to us from the book of Genesis, chapter 41, and I'll be sharing starting at verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, as are the seven empty ears, blighted by famine. It is as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and after them there will rise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land. The plenty will no longer be known in the land because of the famine that will follow, for it will be very grievous. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dreams means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a man who is discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plenteous years. Let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and lay up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to befall the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine." The proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find anyone else like this, one whom is the Spirit of God?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over the land of Egypt." Removing his signet ring from his hand, Pharaoh put it on Joseph's hand. He arrayed in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in the chariot of his second in command, and they cried out in front of him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh. And without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath Paneah, and he gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. I want to acknowledge, I'm reading these Hebrew words with a professor of Hebrew in the room, so I feel like I took Greek, Koine Greek, got no Hebrew. So Safwa will correct all of these pronunciations. Thus, Joseph gained authority over the land of Egypt. Amen.
Open up our eyes to see the wounds that bind all of humankind. May our shattered hearts
Good morning. I'm deeply grateful to be in your midst this morning for seeing the table that I've heard a lot about from Matt. I'm so grateful for the ways that you work at expanding the table, inviting others to share in God's goodness, and the ways you seek to embody God's table to the world that is hungry for love and peace and for God's shalom. It's wonderful to be here as well with Matt and Sarah and Eleanor. I'm grateful for their hospitality and generosity, and reconnecting with Matt is such a joy. As he said, we met at Union Seminary in New York in 2001, and Matt and I were living in the same floor of the dorms, and we had many, many great conversations. One of them I remember was about intentional eating, and you know, an Egyptian who just came to the U.S. for the first time was eating a salami sandwich, having the real American experience. And Matt was asking me, Safwat, what are you eating? I said, a salami sandwich. And Matt, in his prophetic voice, goes on, do you know what happens to pigs in farms? There are other ones, but we could talk about them later after I finish my sermon. It's wonderful reconnecting with you, Matt, and to see how God is using you and the church here to preach and embody and live out the gospel to all people. Now I'm moving into my sermon. So we have become accustomed to read the Bible through the lens of settled communities. Communities that have lived in the same place for multiple generations. But this is something that have made us miss something important about the biblical texts. Because most, if not all, the biblical texts actually reached their final forms in times when the people of God were either exiles, the texts were written for communities in diaspora, living outside of their land, away from their home culture. The texts were written for people who were on the move. So this time, as we reflect on migration, and as people move and seek to cross borders and boundaries, these brothers and sisters are inviting us as a faith community to rediscover and see something that we have missed about the nature of the biblical texts. That these texts are essentially texts of migrants, sojourners, and diaspora communities. They are inviting us in some ways to rediscover a vision that has been all along in the Bible, a vision of God, that God is with the sojourners, and that God accompanies the people who are on the move. And what I hope to do with you this morning is to invite you to look into one episode, one aspect of the Joseph story, to rediscover what these texts might have meant to a people that were living in a diaspora context, away from their home culture, to rediscover part of God's vision for God's people as people that are made of people from different languages, different ethnicities, and different color and different cultures are all together forming God's vision for God's people. As a good Presbyterian, my sermon will have three ideas from the text that Matt read. The first point that I would like to reflect with you on is that the dreams of the migrants and the dreams of those who call themselves host communities are intertwined. And the meaning of the dreams and the fulfillment of the dreams of those who are on the move and those who have been settling for a while, they are unlocked if these people encounter each other. And the meaning is uncovered when these people come together and share their vulnerability with one another. And the second point that I want to make from the Joseph narrative, especially from the episode about Pharaoh's dream, is that it's not just about two groups and two communities who have dreams that then they come together and unlock the meaning of these dreams and fulfill them together, but it takes courage to express vulnerability and the need for the other, and openness as well to see how God is at work through the other, through the stranger, in fulfilling our own dreams. And finally, I would like to invite you through some sort of reflection on how do we use power, privilege? How do we create a space not only to express vulnerability and the need for the other, but also to use our own power and privilege in some ways so that we could extend the table, so that we could invite more people into God's dream of generosity and hospitality. We're used to talk about the American dreams. And for the most part, talking about the American dreams is associated in our minds with the dreams of the migrants and the sojourners. And that's true. Many migrants seek to live a life that is prosperous and a life that is better than the life they have experienced in places where there were war zones or economic life was hard to endure. But what the Joseph story also says is that the dreams and their meanings, the dreams and their fulfillment, are not only associated with migrants. Host communities, people who have settled, people who are doing the role of the welcoming the stranger, also have dreams. Pharaoh had two dreams. He was startled by his dreams and was confused about their meaning. Joseph had dreams. Chapter 37 talks about two dreams that he had. And actually, his dreams are the dreams that led him to be a forced migrant because his brothers sold him into Egypt. Joseph's dreams thus far have not been fulfilled. Instead, his dreams kept on being shattered by the people he trusted, both in Canaan, his family, and also in Potiphar's house. Pharaoh, the most powerful ruler, was disturbed by his own dreams. He had no one to interpret dreams for him. Joseph's dreams and Pharaoh's dreams are now locked together. The meaning and the fulfillment of the dreams of the forced migrant and the dreams of the host community hinge on one another. As the confusion arises in Pharaoh's court, his servant remembers Joseph not as a dreamer, but as a Hebrew slave who interprets dreams. As a migrant, Joseph is not only a dreamer, but he is dreams interpreter. He gives meaning to other people's dreams. Is it the liminal space of a migrant that allows migrants to actually play this role of interpreting dreams, of crossing boundaries between the divine and the human? Something really interesting, even in the story of Daniel, another forced migrant of some sort, he also interprets dreams. Whether an unfulfilled dream such as that of Joseph or a confusing dream such as that of Pharaoh, they are now bound together. Joseph's story seems to be saying that the fulfillment of dreams or dealing with the anxiety of the unknown begins with encountering the other, and by giving meaning to the dreams of the other. Joseph's dreams were fulfilled when he started to give meaning to other people's dreams, the dream of the cupbearer in prison, and Pharaoh's dreams. Pharaoh's dreams, which had no one to interpret, and I'm emphasizing this because the text repeats it different times. Pharaoh's dreams, which terrified the royal court of a mighty nation, were unlocked when they became a path of a migrant, a powerless Hebrew slave, to fulfill his own dreams. Said differently, finding meaning and harmony between migrant and host communities suggests the story of Joseph lies in the recognition of the other as a dreamer who has hopes and fears, who has power and needs. The point here is that not only each community or individual have dreams and they are looking for meaning, but be it a migrant or a host, they also have needs and have something to offer for the needs of the other. It takes power and courage to be vulnerable, to express the need for the other, the one who is different from me, the other who is ethnically different, the other who is culturally different, and who is religiously different. When Joseph interpreted the dream for the cupbearer, he told him, "Remember me when you come before Pharaoh." And when Pharaoh retold his dreams to Joseph, he began and ended his report with a repeated statement, and there is no one to give its interpretation. Joseph is vulnerable, and so is Pharaoh. Joseph is in pain of the betrayal of his brothers and Potiphar and his wife. Pharaoh is terrified and disturbed by his dreams. Despite the pain and the fear, Joseph and Pharaoh come to terms with their own need for the other, for the one who is different. The need here is mutual. Vulnerability tears down the boundaries that separate the migrant and the host. It leads to crossing boundaries to the other. There is also an openness to receive what the other can offer. The text talks about something more than just material contribution, though that is something important. What's fascinating about the exchange between Joseph and Pharaoh is that they see each other as instruments through whom God works. It's not just about the material contribution that we can receive and give to the other, but it's about a different way of seeing who the other is that we are encountering. Joseph and Pharaoh see each other as agents through whom God speaks. Joseph repeatedly says to Pharaoh, "God has shown you what God is about to do." And Pharaoh, after he heard the interpretation of the dream, tells his court, "Can we find anyone else like this?" And listen to these words, "one in whom is the Spirit of God." This is a foreign ruler talking about a migrant. Someone seeing this migrant as a person who has the Spirit of God. "Since God has shown you," you see the reverse now, "God showed you, Pharaoh," and now Pharaoh is saying, "since God had shown you, Joseph." God is speaking through these two different people. "Since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you." Both Pharaoh and Joseph use, here's a Hebrew lesson for you. He uses the Hebrew word Elohim, which is a generic word for God. The story of Joseph in chapters 37 to 50, the characters never use the divine name Yahweh, the name of the God of Israel, except by the narrator, chapter 39. So, does Joseph mean God, the God of the Hebrews? Does Pharaoh mean God, the God of the Egyptians? Can we tell? We don't know. But what's clear from the use of the divine name here, this generic divine name, Elohim, is that these two people who are different culturally and religiously are coming together on a common ground in which they see that God is at work through the other person. Though they are different, but they see that God is speaking through this other person. They have the courage to express their need to the other person who is religiously different, and they are also willing to see the other as a divine gift or as a person through whom God is offering a gift to this community. This is significant because sometimes host communities with good intentions, they always see themselves as the ones who are offering hospitality and the ones who are giving and the ones who are opening and extending the table. And that's very good. But at the same time, sometimes host communities need to remember and need to ask, how are we seeing the other also as a gift? What is the other, what is the migrant offering us here? And can we open ourselves to receive these gifts? Sometimes migrant communities, because of the suffering and the pain that they have experienced and endured, they shy away sometimes from seeing themselves as contributing to the faith communities or to the communities or the societies to which they migrate. And that also needs to be changed, because migrants can contribute a whole lot to the community to which they live and to which they have migrated. So it's about a mind shift in which both communities, migrant and host, can see each other as mutually in need of the other, but also mutually contributing and giving and receiving. It's a vulnerable space. Sometimes can be unknown. We don't know how people are going to receive the gifts that we're offering. We don't know what our needs are, and we need to do more discerning on that. But imagine this. This is a ruler of the one of the mightiest nations of the ancient Near East, Egypt. And I'm not saying that just because I'm an Egyptian, but it was part of the historical milieu. A ruler wakes up confused with his dream, a terrifying dream of a danger, of a famine that is pending. A dream like this would turn a state on a very tight policy. Fear would spread out. Foreigners would be questioned and doubted. But what's surprising is that Pharaoh, though he's disturbed, does not turn his fears into a xenophobic policy. This ruler does not use the terrifying news to close the borders and to build walls. Instead, he entrusts himself and his kingdom to the wisdom of a foreigner. He does not let the foreigner figure out the problem and then says, send them back to their country. He appoints this foreigner to be the second person in the country to face the pending famine. When a ruler or a host community expresses their vulnerability, when they see the other as a spiritual being through whom God speaks, the response to the other, to the migrant, can be different. The response is not that of fear, but that of trust and generosity. Pharaoh then appoints Joseph to be the second person in the kingdom. Pharaoh gave Joseph authority, dressed him in Egyptian clothing. He gave him a golden necklace, his signet, and he arranged a marriage for him with the daughter of the high priest. Joseph essentially becomes an Egyptian, to the point that his brothers, when they come to buy food in chapter 42, they did not recognize him. But that leaves us with some questions. Does Pharaoh try here to assimilate Joseph into the Egyptian culture? Or is Pharaoh using his power to help Joseph integrate into the Egyptian context? Was there a resistance for this foreigner to take such an important position, and therefore Pharaoh is using his power to make room for Joseph into the host culture? Has Joseph abandoned his culture? Is that the case? What about the fact that he named his children Hebrew names? These are great questions, aren't they? I'm glad to ask them, but I'm not going to answer them. Instead, I invite you to continue to think about them. What is the role of power in this context in relation to integration and making room for the other? This story, this narrative is countercultural in what it says about migration and cross-cultural relations. Dreams, which are a fertile ground for imagination, are also spaces through which God seeks to transform reality. Sometimes we fear that the reality of hatred and xenophobia is here to stay. This is not true, brothers and sisters, because God is at work through the dreams of the host communities and the migrants who are imagining and birthing a new reality. A new reality in which people, no matter what their background is, have the courage to be vulnerable and to rely on the other, trusting that God will fulfill their dreams through the stranger. God is at work using agents from different backgrounds as they open themselves to see the other as more than an economic asset or a beneficial partner. Rather, they see each other as spiritual beings through whom God speaks and God changes the world. God is at work stirring the imagination, the dreams of migrants and host communities as they open themselves to receive the gifts that the other brings, in expressing their needs for each other, in receiving the wisdom that the other brings. When humans do that, humans resist the temptation of autonomy, of being independent, and they tear the walls that separate them from the other. And now, brothers and sisters who are present here, God calls you to dream and to realize that your dreams will be unlocked as you encounter the foreigner, the other, those who are different from you. God will meet your needs as you open yourself to those vulnerable spaces of offering and receiving, as you seek to overcome fear by generosity, and as you receive healing and meaning through the hands of those who are different from you. God calls you to reflect on how you use your own power or privilege as an ally to those who are alienated. God calls you to reflect on how open you are to cross-cultural spaces that sometimes and often feel uncomfortable. But they are essentially spaces in which and through which we experience God's dreams for a human community that is generous, caring, just, and hospitable. Amen. Find your